This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 274, brought to you by C2E2, Graphically, and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Hi, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 274. My name is Thomas Caters. I'm here with Josh Flanagan. Josh.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery. Paul, your turn.
Hello.
At iFanboy, they like comics. I do too. They read comics, so do I. And every week, we all read a bunch of comics, and then one of them picks their favorite and writes about it on the website, and they justify it to all of your questions. And then they talk about it on this podcast.
We don't do that anymore. We learned our lesson.
They apologize. They apologize for what they pick. Not only did they talk about the pick of the week, but we like to talk about all the other books from this week. Well, not all of them, but just ones that we have things to say about.
just keep swimming.
Before we get to the show, a quick reminder slash warning. This is a review show, and it is absolutely necessary that we talk about what happens in the issue, or it will be boring. So if you're worried about having the issue spoiled, just listen later. You don't need to listen to this now.
We may even throw in some fake spoilers, just things that didn't happen.
We're going to ruin movies.
We're going to ruin other things.
We're going to ruin a lot of things for you.
So if you're listening at home and this happens to be your first show and you've never listened to it before, our regular host, you're probably wondering now anyway what's going on. Ron and Connor are in Seattle at the Emerald City Comic Con, and I'm holding the fort. So I have our two intrepid guests here, Tom and Paul, who write for the site.
We got Shanghai'd.
Yeah.
Do we deal with the Seattle thing? Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. So we're gonna go ahead and do the show. We're gonna soldier on as best we can, and then hopefully, if all goes according to plan, then I'll see a bunch of messages that say, "Man, you guys should always do the show with Josh and with Tom and with Paul, and screw those other two guys." That's what
just
I'm
call
hoping
us
for.
The House Arrest Three.
Mm-hmm. Is it offensive to say Shanghai'd 2011?
I don't think so. It's a place. Okay. Can you be racist against a place?
Places.
I think you can.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, there was already an error in the script that I think may have tripped Tom up. So this week, Ron does not have the pick. I do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get
that's
right.
That's what tripped me up.
That was it. Right away. So the pick of the week was Axe Cop, Bad Guy Earth number 1. I don't know why I wrote number 2. There's two errors in two lines.
It's a much looser atmosphere when Ron and Connor.
The adults are going to have to improvise what happens in the second issue.
Yeah, it's true. Now, I first learned about Axe Cop from something that Paul wrote on our site. Basically, the deal here is that Ethan Nicole is an artist. He is, as is clearly mentioned, 30 years old. And he went home for a Christmas break and made a comic book with his then five, now six-year-old brother, Malachi, which is a hell of a name for a five-year-old to carry around. And they did this thing called Axe Cop, and it basically it reads exactly like you would think. It's a slightly better structured stream of consciousness rambling of a six-year-old boy's mind. There is an Axe Cop, who is a cop with an axe. There is a lizard soldier who...
Dinosaur soldier,
excuse me.
He was early on, he was flute cop, and then dinosaurs bit him, so he turned into dinosaur soldier. There's the logic flow here.
Yeah, and we're gonna get to that. this issue, Bad Guy Earth, is the first... It was a webcomic, basically, and that was collected into a trade, but this issue is the first Done for Comics original... issue published by Dark Horse Comics, and I thought, oh, let's try it. Let's that'll be some fun. And this was totally one of those weeks where I was reading all my books and I was like, I got nothing. Like, I read some stuff that's pretty good, but nothing was jumping off the plane. Yeah. And I started to think about it, and I was like, you know, the only thing that made me laugh out loud, and the only thing that sort of impressed me with its imagination, and that I had anything to say about was Axe Cop, because. It really there in this business where in comics is all about how much imagination you can put on this page, because there's nothing to limit anybody except for sort of the skill of the artist, you know, and what they're able to draw, and then what the writer is able to think of, and this was such a lovely and pure distillation of that idea, where you just take it all the way back to the most basic thing, like what would a 6-year-old say would be really cool stuff, and as you go through it, like it literally I could just imagine myself sitting in a playground talking to a kid, and he's telling me a story that just doesn't make any sense, and it completely goes along with his own whims, and it completely charmed me. And it had been you know, massaged and put into pages, and there is actually a story that goes on, but it also, you know, just keeps turning on a dime, and it's written in such a way that's, you know, so then this happened, and then there was this, and so this, and I was writing the review up, and I can't tell you how many times. Just some wacky stuff turned. I'm trying not to swear when I say this, too. I just feel like it's inappropriate.
Yeah, you don't want to associate that sort of cussing with such a young writer.
I feel like I want the writer to be able to listen to this part.
Oh.
Not the whole show, mind you.
No, when we're done talking, he totally cares.
He's going to get dirty later.
Can we watch Ben 10, please?
Clearly, this kid's imagination is light years beyond many people who are in the writing profession today, certainly mine. And I was impressed by it. I was literally like, that's pretty good.
You know, the thing that struck me when I read it, and I loved it as well, mm-hmm. is that for mainstream comics, the soap opera portion of it, mm-hmm. the part that sort of is what draws people back month to month, also becomes sort of the mechanics that everyone becomes obsessed with. Mm-hmm. And those mechanics very much... suck all spontaneity out of everything. Like, you know, you have interviews with creators about what they're planning 6 months from now. You have previews of books that come out in 3 months. When you go to conventions, you go to panels, people are asking about how things end like 3 months from now. There's the industry, from the readers to the writers to everything, is really, especially, you know, in mainstream comics, is really focused on the next thing and making sure everything fits together into that. And that's actually really not conducive to spontaneity in any way whatsoever, mm-hmm. you know, in comics. And this was the exact opposite. Like, if you asked him what happens next, he'd be like, well, you just make it up. You know, there's no, like, the kid doesn't have like a flow chart in his room. Like, okay, when the second Axe Cop miniseries comes out, we have to make sure that it ends, you know, this way to set up the spinoff of, you know, of Dinosaur Soldier, because we have to make sure it all lines up. And it's really easy to lose track of that, mm-hmm. that's kind of, like you were saying, with the imagination is the only limit. Mm-hmm. But we put tons of limits on that in most comics. And this was completely wiping all of that away. And it was laugh out loud funny in several parts.
I want people to understand that on the first page, Axe Cop and Dinosaur Soldier are sitting in a restaurant, and Axe Cop says, "I'm thirsty. I want to drink a water." Looks over, sees a cup of water at another table, stares at it, goes, He considers whether he wants to drink it or not. He takes a drink of the water screams. The hammer sitting with the water is like, "Hey, what are you doing? That's my buddy. You just drank his brain." I thought it was water.
Yeah.
No, the water is his brain.
His brain.
He was once a great warrior.
And then what's funny is that by the bottom of the page, the cup sprouts an axe handle, which was not there earlier. Yeah. Or no, an axe blade.
Yeah, and he's like, "That's a pretty sweet blade. I'm thinking about taking it." And I like...
Axe Cop loves axes.
That's he went to Axe Cop Academy. You know, that's he didn't go to normal police academy. You know, the normal police academy, and it's really funny because it does have that sort of way that little kids look at how the world works, like this sort of like you go, police go to a police academy, an axe cop would go to like an axe cop academy if there was an axe cop. So there's like weird there's logic that fits within like a kid's viewpoint of the world, but it's not just funny because it's like, oh, look at what this kid wrote. It is very clever and like written in a certain, you know, I don't know if the older brother, you know, obviously there's some massaging of it to make it like readable as an actual story, but there's some really like there's just really clever turns, like the thing with the cup where it's just like, oh, this is completely insane, you know, and right away within the first two pages you kind of get the feeling of what's going to be happening. You know, there's going to be a dinosaur later with Gatling gun arms, you know, flying around wearing aviator glasses. Yeah,
and his aviator glasses in a dog collar.
Yeah, and there's video game logic too. There's like power ups, and they have like shield levels. Like there's like a bar that goes down on the shield array on their car when they're being attacked. And I interviewed Ethan a few months ago about the whole process. And this is like a lot of people that say like, "Well, your brother's really violent." Like, and he's like, he's like a serial killer. There's something wrong with him, but it's totally not that. It's like, it's a regular kid, and he has a lot of the violence that he's, his understanding of violence is through video games. And it's sort of like harmless stuff. You don't die, you just blow up. And there's nothing terribly dangerous about this kid. He seems like a totally normal kid. There's like process videos online he can watch, and they just have a really great relationship working together. And like they have like deals where, oh, help me, you know, work out this next part of the story, and then you can, you know, play, you know, your Nintendo DS for, you know, a while. You know, like he has little breaks and, you know, whatever. Here's your juice box or whatever. But so there's, you know, there's video game logic in it, and it's just so inventive and unfiltered and fun, and it's just like total unabashed joy in it. And yeah. I like what you're saying, Tom, about how, you know, you don't think about what's next, because what's going on right now is just so insane. And it's a turn like every panel. And they're like, we did best of the week in panels earlier, and you know, there's I was trying to find a good thing to talk about, and I just found like it could be a strip. It's like three panels together, and they tell their own little story. There's just so much packed into this issue, and it's so much fun.
Tom, what was the first point when you laughed while you were reading this?
It was the thing with the cup, where it was actually when the hammer was like, "Now he might be dumb forever," and the pictures of like. The glass now has like zombie eyes, like its brain got completely, you know.
And I was going through it, and it wasn't making me laugh a lot the whole way through it, but there, like I was warming to it more and more as I kept going, and I got to the point at the end where they have the bad guy machine.
Yeah.
And the bad guy machine is or it's the good guy machine. You take a bad guy, so they go to a prison, and they get the strongest bad guy ever, Pseudo Goodus.
Yeah.
And they throw him in the good guy machine, and it comes out as a new good guy named Handcuff Man. And I was like, that's all right, that's all right. And Handcuff Man throws handcuffs on a bad guy, and then the next panel, and then they shock him until he died.
Or when Axe Cop put him to bed because it was time for him to go to sleep. Or, you know, like all that sort of like Axe Cop's daily 2-minute naps.
2-minute nap. And he dreams about dinosaurs crying. So he knows that the dinosaurs are in trouble. So let's go.
I mean, that's it's just, and that all happens in this issue. And that is maybe a quarter of the things that
we didn't mention. There's like a new planet. They look out the window of the diner. There's a new planet just floating there. they go to the planet. There's stuff with the dinosaur. The splashes. I mean, we're talking about how like crazy the writing is, but also I think the art's really good. And I think Ethan really stepped up his game, even from the webcomic, which, I mean, it's really good. I mean, you know, when you think like, okay, he's a competent artist and it's great cartooning and stuff. But this, there's some really impressive stuff in here, like the splash page with Wexler, the dinosaur with the machine gun arms, fighting fighter jets. It's just a great splash page. And also, Axe Cop, the webcomic, is black and white. Here, there's color, which it looks amazing. And there's sort of a great texture to it too. So I think it's a really good looking comic, I think, as well.
Yeah, and it's I don't want all my comics like this, but sure. it was incredibly refreshing, and it was incredibly fun. And if you feel like you're lacking a little bit of that, then there's almost no way to go wrong with this. And it's so, like, you can't label it with anything that you give other comics. You can't be like, oh, they were just trying to do this, or and it's not any of that. There's no pretense about it. There is only like what is on the page, and you take that for exactly the value that it has. And there's no subtext, no anything. It's just insanity and imagination, like in the best way. And that's what made it easily sort of stand out this week out of everything else I read.
I think it reads very well, like in this kind of dose. Like,
yeah,
I know definitely. People were saying, like, you know, I was reading the trade, and then around like the halfway point, I was like, this is getting a bit much. I think that might be too much if you're reading the whole webcomic collection, which previously came out. But like this, like a single issue, there's so much going on in there. I think it's like the perfect amount. And then, you know, read some other comics, come back to it, you know, issue two next month or whatever, read that, and then you'll be anticipating it again. You'll want that fix. So
yeah.
I think, you know, don't read big chunks of it at a time, because I think it's just meant to, you know, it brightens up your day. Read an issue every now and then, read a web comic, you know, on a certain lunch break or something. And, you know, I don't think it's meant for like extreme consumption where you're mainlining so much of it at a time.
It's, I mean, and it's a 3-issue mini, so, you know,
it's perfect.
Yeah, it's totally worth it.
I can't imagine what a 6-issue mini would be like.
If those of you out there have been wondering about the Man-Thing and his place in the Marvel Universe, well, then we have good news for you. Thunderbolts number 154 really delves into the Man-Thing.
Oh, I love Man-Thing.
Yeah.
I love Man-Thing.
They're really going for a Man-Thing renaissance, I think, at this point. Jeff Parker with Declan Shalvey, who's sort of the sometimes artist on this book. It was just like a fun little one-and-done tale, and actually accomplished character development of the Man-Thing.
It was really... have you guys ever read the old Man-Thing stuff?
No. A little bit.
Okay. I thought they did a really good job in taking a lot of the old Man-Thing stuff. Like, the whole thing with Man-Thing is, you know, the narration is always Man-Thing is just a creature, like... a subhuman creature who has no feelings, but you always get the hint that he does, you know, by stuff that he does, you know, like that's sort of the game.
It's like a big writers,
yeah, it's like the game the writers kind of like, are they hinting that the guy is still in there somewhere, you know, that's sort of the back and forth game they have. And they kind of did an interesting job of bringing that into the newer take. And the panel where he takes the like alien, the extra dimensional salamander, and rips its jaw. Mm-hmm. Part, I mean, that happened in every single issue of the old Man-Thing, and it was always a crocodile. Like, that was how he killed a crocodile. That was his
signature move.
It was his signature move, was to rip its mouth apart like that. And I was like, ah, yes, this reminds me of old Man-Thing issues. And they added something quite, I thought, was a really interesting and sort of drastic change from, I think, how Man-Thing had always been sort of seen in the past.
As in the scientist thing?
No, like wanting to hang out with people.
I liked that. Because the one thing that was kind of sad about the story this far is that you kind of felt like he was just shackled with there among them. He didn't want to be there. But now there's a reason for him to be there, so you don't have to have that sort of that hanging over you. Because always a little bit in the background, I was thinking,
why is he there? Yeah, like,
it's kind of mean of them, really.
But the man thing Moonstone relationship is one of my favorite relationships in comics. It's just it's so bizarre that he doesn't talk. He doesn't even make noises really. Most of the time he doesn't even like fight in the Thunderbolts issues. He usually gets like torn to pieces, and then they put him back together or he reforms or whatever. But he always ends up saving Moonstone or going to her aid. And it's just I love that it's just like a little unspoken thing. Mm-hmm. We've got an exciting new recruit for the next issue, which I gasped aloud when I found out about that. So that was very cool.
There's actually one little bit where they actually explained, well, how come he doesn't ever burn any of the Thunderbolts? And they were just like, they're not afraid of him. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Done and dusted. There. All right. Totally fine. Totally a fun little issue. Another good one. There hasn't really been a bad one yet.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that are giant sized. See how they did there.
Ironically, giant size.
The giant size Atom special. Is this Lemire and Asrar, Paul?
Yes, it is.
Tell us about it.
This is okay. So they had the Atom co-feature that they were doing in, was it Adventure Comics?
Yes.
Right. So, and then, you know, they did away with the co-features, and now we've got, okay, now we're going to do everything. It's sort of like they're going to be doing that with the Jimmy Olsen special with Nick Spencer stuff. So this is just they're wrapping up that storyline. I think it's called Nucleus for Captain Atom, or for the Atom, excuse me. And I really liked this because this is sort of... Jeff Lemire's DC superhero stuff is giving me what I think we used to get from Jeff Johns with stuff like JSA and Action Comics. Whereas I'm feeling like a little cold on Green Lantern. I dropped that recently, and so I'm kind of missing my sort of classic superhero fix for DC. And I think Lemire really brings in like the sort of the old school action adventure aspect of characters like the Atom and Hawkman. And I just thought it was a whole lot of fun. And Mahmoud Asrar, I think is just an amazing, artist for this kind of story. It's just a great sort of romp, and, I liked it a whole lot. So I hope we see more of him doing things. Like, I'd love to see him on, you know, Action Comics or JSA or something like that.
He'd be really good for that kind of thing. I think that they just don't think he's quite a big enough name yet, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, I hope, he's... right now he's doing... At Dark Horse, he's doing the Star Wars book. Mm-hmm. I hope he's, get some really high-profile stuff and moves up to... Because I think he's good enough. One of the better artists working at DC right now. Especially for this kind of story. There's something... It's just a perfect fit, and I really do think Jeff Lemire. You know, when you find out Jeff Lemire, the guy from Essex County, is going to be doing Superboy stories and stuff like that, is that going to fit? But it totally does. I think he really has a great voice for these stories. So
he knows this stuff. He's like a DC fanboy from like an old school, like Tom.
Yeah.
Not to minimize your role in the world, but
oh no, it's okay. If that's all I ever amount to, I guess.
Is this? It's a special, so I guess it's the future of Atom stories is unclear.
Yeah, it's the
future of Atom stories is always unclear.
It's always unclear.
If you'll ever get more of them,
I know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, so he goes leaping off. He goes leaping off a building at the end. So I don't know if he's giving up.
He died.
He dies. Basically, he's given up entirely. But
unless you see him land, mm-hmm.
I think it's very cool, and I think that they do enough to get you up to speed if you hadn't read the co-features leading to this. So,
now back in San Diego in July of last year, I spoke with Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, and there was a slightly awkward moment where I was like, "So what's up next?" And I'm like, "You tell us." And it was really kind of sad because they're doing, they have been with the Marvel Cosmic stuff, exemplary work for years and years at a time. But they also mentioned a Groot and Rocket Raccoon miniseries that never came to pass. And now I find out that is the backup in this Annihilators book. and I was very happy to buy it. And I was also very happy to buy. I'm not a person who's going to go after a variant cover, but if you're going to do a Mike Mignola variant cover with Groot and Rocket Raccoon,
absolutely,
on it, I will buy that. Every time that it's possible to do so. First half of this was a story about the Annihilators, just sort of the leftover stuff of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're all these Alpha Plus, which is the Marvel way of, and I really like when they really go after that sort of codification of Marvel heroes, that Alpha Plus rating. And it's Ronan the Accuser and what's his name from the Shi'ar?
The Guardian?
Yeah.
No.
The Centurion? Whatever.
Centurion?
Oh, Gladiator, God. Right?
Gladiator, there's
people,
that's his name.
People yelling right now.
Yeah,
you know.
Silver Surfer, Quasar, and Beta Ray Bill. And then they meet a Space Knight, and they fight, and they find out they're all going to be on the same team, and it's fine. But the underlying sort of thing going on in this story, and this is the thing about all these Abnett Landing stories all along, is that there's always something else interesting besides just the big space fight. Whether it's the personal connection to the characters, and the whole thing that's going on here is that, and it almost started to get a little old until I realized where it was going, is that Quasar is like, I'm not up to this. But the problem is they're all Alpha Plus level, and if any of them ever cut loose or anything, they'll just destroy everything. So it's like that idea about like, what point is a nuclear weapon useless because it's just too destructive?
Yeah, it's like having a team of all Thors. It's like having an Avengers team. Yeah. It's every member is Thor, and so that, like, you know, I'm with you in sort of that it got a little tedious, but it does, you know, there is a method to it. But I felt like this, at least the Annihilators half of this issue, it felt like a little bit like one long drawn out beat, mm-hmm. because it's the Space Knight testing them and saying that, you know, you're limiting yourselves and you have to let go and stuff like that, and then realizing that if they do, it's going to destroy everything. And the other thing about this, there's this whole shadow of the Guardians of the Galaxy over the whole thing, mm-hmm. because Nova and what's his face and Star-Lord are missing in action in the Cancerverse, presumed dead, so there's that like physically over the story, but there's also the fact that it kind of feels like, not that Abnett and Lanning are selling out, but that like we're going in reverse the way we should go, mm-hmm. because you started off with like the underdogs, and now you're going to like the corporate version because it's like everybody's like everybody's like overpowered Alpha Plus, and you kind of want the Guardians to come back because they're the ragtag team.
Yeah, I kind of felt this. The only thing that bothered me about the first half is I always feel like, especially with the cosmic stuff that Abnett and Lanning have been doing that I've really enjoyed, I always feel like there's a lot of time spent with leftovers of something else. Mm-hmm. Like and it feels like that's sort of been like the rhythm of those stories again and again. Mm-hmm. And this time I was like, I kind of like what Paul was saying, the Guardians hanging over it. I just kind of felt like, you know, I kind of wish it was just a Guardians story. You know, like not that that's mm-hmm. possible, but, you know, obviously they changed it, but I kind of felt like, I missed the previous more than I kind of loved the first story. I kind of was sitting there like,
you're coasting,
I missed
on
that,
the fumes of what was great before. I still had enough of that flavor that I still enjoyed it. And it's interesting that you're talking about there's all this leftover stuff, but I missed some of that, and it's still like, you know what's going on, and I really like that. I thought that was
They do a good job.
The second story was awesome.
Well, here's the thing. It's a $5 book. And if you had left out the first half of it and I paid $5 for this half an issue, I would have been completely fine. Because it was a story of Rocket Raccoon after he goes and tries to find a real job.
Yes.
At Timely Inc., working in the mail cart. Timely, that's a Marvel joke for those of you following along at home.
No problem whatsoever.
Art by Timothy Green II, who killed it. Not your typical sort of superhero fan favorite kind of artist.
Not at all.
Cartooned the hell out of this, and I'm always impressed when people can make a raccoon emote, an anthropomorphic raccoon, and you really get to know what he's thinking, and you can read his facial expressions and his body language and stuff, but he still looks like a raccoon. I thought that was great, and it was just this big silly fight with a clown.
Yeah, it was great.
A sentient wooden clown.
Yeah.
And it's like it's Rocket Raccoon in Office Space. He's working he's pushing the mail cart around.
Yeah.
I love the opening, the Timely Ink stuff where they're talking about like your needifications.
Yeah.
Redactify all your problematory
really
areas.
At that playing with language. I think that's a British thing. British people are better at that than we are.
Yeah.
And I'm always impressed by it. And then by the end, he goes to the branch world where Groot is supposed to be from, and there's this big twist on the Groot story. And it's also beautifully rendered, like all these trees coming out of the forest. It was just a totally fun little story, and it was worth the wait. And I can't wait to read the next part of it.
And a really like an appalling sort of like a moan of despair that the last splash there, but also really really hilarious with Groot tied up to a pedestal with some like robot woodpeckers surrounding him on this, like atoll or something. Like lightning in a whirlpool.
Real quick, I wanted to talk about Jonah Hex number 65. Jordi Brunet on this one, so you know that it's really going to be great looking with amazing storytelling. This was actually, the story was interesting of note because it took a slightly different tack on Jonah finds the person, doesn't matter what the person's doing, he's going to kill them. In this issue, it went a little bit differently, and you sort of, it's one of those stories, they do it like every 2 years. Will they do one story where Jonah kind of is a good guy? Like there's
he's
the,
a big softy.
The slightest hint that he's not a completely remorseless killer.
It's the white to make it gray, you know.
Yeah,
make sure he's a gray area.
And the whole time I was like, "What the hell's going on with this story? This is weird." And then at the last page, with no words, they give it to you, and they did it. You know, again, like it takes an enormous amount of storytelling to commit, to sort of show you what that's like and what that is without explaining it. And I was really impressed by that. Really good issue. They always are. So it's hard to come up with something else about it. Lock and Key, Keys to the Kingdom, number 5. Paul, this is your favorite thing being published on God's Green Earth.
Oh, God, yeah. I know a lot of people are reading this in trade, so I'll be quick about it and not be too spoilery. I'll go the Kirkman route with it.
We said we'd spoil,
okay.
Paul.
All right.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah, so everybody turns into a dragon in this issue. Which is cool. No, well, it actually could happen. But no, that's a fake spoiler. No, this is a big turning point issue. This is the penultimate issue of this particular miniseries. On the cover, it says in 14 issues, it's all over. So we're getting to the countdown to the final 12, the final 10.
How frequently do the issues come out? Is it every month or is it?
I think it's every month. Or every other month, excuse me. So I don't know. I mean, I don't mind that it comes out not every month because it's always really well constructed. It never feels like it's just a means towards an end. Every page, there's a lot of thought put into it. There's a lot of workmanship from Gabriel Rodriguez, the artist. There's a great sequence in here where two buddies are talking, and Bo, the little kid, is they're at an ice rink, and one of the panels is and best of the weekend panels. Bo is putting on his ice skates, and he's a little kid. He can't tie them very well, so he's like trying in the background. It's just this like background ancillary thing, trying to put his lace these up, and then finally one of them helps him. But it's just like this cool background element, an extra visual interest, extra bit of storytelling going on. And this is a big deal because the bad guy, I've been calling him the Voldemort of the series, Dodge, who's been posing as a teenage friend and actually a boyfriend of one of the characters. He's found out as being the Voldemort of the series, as being the big bad. Tyler Locke discovers that he's this demonic presence, and he's the one who's been causing all this trouble. He's the one who's been trying to kill them this whole time. So we have some real forward movement on the story, and it's just phenomenal stuff. If there's any book I could recommend to people to read, it's Lock and Key. I think it's just phenomenal.
But it is important that, like, at this point, you couldn't jump on at this point.
You gotta go back and read from the beginning. It's one of those things. It is a novel, and it's like he talks about it. Joe Hill talks about it being like there being a three-act structure, and I think since he set out to do it, he's had a finite conclusion in mind, and he's had an act breakdown set up. And so it's moving towards the end here, and you really have to start from the beginning. But it's totally worth it. Go grab the hardcovers or the paperbacks and check it out. But it's just amazing stuff, and it's one of the reasons it's hard to jump into. It's not the mythology of it, the horror fantasy stuff. That's not even my favorite part, even though that's all done well. It's the character interactions. It's so tightly focused on this core family of the mother, two sons, and then a daughter, and you know these characters so well just because that's the only focus of the story. It doesn't move around that much, and their, you know, misadventures and horrible things they go through in this house that they live in with the mystical keys. So high recommendation.
Now, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be attending the C2E2 convention, and in my mind, Tom should be there.
Mm.
But in the meantime, why don't you tell us about it?
About Chicago? About C2E2?
About C2E2.
Either one? Yeah. It's going on March 18th through 20th, and it's in the West Building at the McCormick Place in downtown Chicago. It's more fan-friendly. I don't know what happened last year that fans were tortured somehow.
It was an obstacle course.
With the branding and the scarification that was going on. It's in Chicago. It's easy to get from the McCormick Place to the other parts of Chicago that are fun. Bus, you can walk, you could take a Segway. You can rent those near there. I know the park. Yeah, it's all done there. And at the convention, you have guests like Brian Michael Bendis, Adam Hughes, Ben Templesmith, Gene Ha, Cliff Chang, Mahmoud Asrar, Paul Cornell, Mike Norton, Scotty Young, Scott Snyder, and tons more. I think they're still announcing more people that are going to be there. And there's even celebrities outside of comic books. And I actually would count both of these people as legitimate celebrities. Alicia Dushku. Eliza, I see. And Rick.
Such a huge celebrity.
Rick Bayless. Is that, Paul, I'm not sure. Rick
Bayless.
Yeah.
He's a chef.
That's... Ron, are you sure he's a chef?
Oh, yeah. Ron is doing a panel with Rick Bayless.
About what?
Food and comics with C.B. Sobolski. God. I know. I'm not sure how it works either, but I'm going to be fascinated. But there's going to be food there, and the dude rocks at the food, so...
Well, I know Rick Bayless is a chef. Yeah. I'm East Coast elite. I know what's going on.
I watch fucking Top Chef, okay? He's a master. He's a Top Chef.
He's a master. He has several fantastic restaurants in Chicago that you could go to. And, well, I mean, if you're the type of person like me who can't go to a convention for 3 days, really, mm-hmm. I get bored about an hour into the day.
You get mobbed. It's like the Beatles in 64.
It's sweaty people trying to touch me everywhere. At least you're in Chicago, so you can go do something else. And if you buy your tickets at C2E2.com before March 14th, you can get the whole weekend for $50, which is a steal. So go. Just go. I wish I could go. I can't.
I'm a little upset about it. C2E2.com is where you can go to find out more about that. Yeah. John Severin.
Yes. Damn. Witchfinder Lost and Gone Forever. I love that they found a way to put Edward Gray in the Old West and have John Severin draw the stories. Because it's of course a perfect mix with John Severin, who's a classic artist, and because it is done by Mignola and Arcudi, it's also well written, and it is it's fun to see a sort of a proper Englishman in the Old West, sort of getting into, you know, fights, shooting people, all the classic sort of Western things, and he's got like the little bit of that sort of English attitude, I would say. You know, the sort of thing that made us kick him out.
He smirks a lot.
Yeah, he smirks. And it's a fun series, just like all the other stuff from the Hellboy universe. They do a very good job of like picking a niche to go into and just nailing it when they do it. They get the right artist to draw it. They get a tight story to go in there, and it works out great, and this looks like just another successful Hellboy universe title.
And then Dave Stewart comes in and says, "I got this."
Boom. Yeah, and he just colors it, and it looks great. And
there's actually Western Vistas in there.
I mean, is there to me, the Hellboy universe is the most steady seal of quality in comics for me. Like, if I know if it's coming from that sort of realm, 99% of the time I know I'm going to enjoy it, and there's no one else that has that sort of level of quality as far as I'm concerned.
Powers number 7, I was like, oh, that's coming out again. I've actually been reading through old Powers. I've been reading through my definitive hardcover covers, going through it again. And part of it kind of feels like going back and watching Kevin Smith movies 10 years later, a little bit. Like, I loved them at the time, and now I can see the cracks and stuff, but I could also see a lot of the stuff that was original that I really liked about it. I had a little bit of a hard time with this issue, and I wanted to like it more than I did. There was stuff in it that I liked, but it was also kind of weird. But at the same time, like, it was Powers, and it's still... I really like this world. I'm really invested in these characters, but we see them so rarely now that it's a little hard to get into the story.
Although, is it the release schedule throws it off for you? If it came out more regularly, do you think you'd be able
maybe.
To get back?
It just feels like we haven't seen... Like, you have to get yourself back. And I'm like, oh, right, why is Dina Pilgrim here? What's going on there? And there's a big thing that happens with Dina. You know, the backdrop of this story about these golden characters, the god characters, the sort of superheroes who thinks that they're gods, and there's a question about whether they are or not. It's also interesting to see how Omic's style has changed over the years too. But boy, it is just as word bubbly as ever.
I mean, it doesn't change.
It's word bubbly rific. And that's not really a complaint. That's just what the book is. It always has been. I kind of liked it, but I'm feeling... I remember a long time ago, Connor said something along the lines of, you know, maybe this should have ended when that ended last time. And I think he might have had a point, but I'm going to see where it goes. I'm never going to not buy this.
That's your evergreen purchase?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, unless it really, really goes away. Captain America, Ultimate Captain America, number 3. Mm-hmm. Despite all everything to the contrary, I like this.
I heard there's waterboarding.
Yes, there is. There's a waterboarding scene. And when I say everything to the contrary, you know, Captain America is probably you know, among my most favorite characters in comics, definitely in the Marvel universe. And this isn't that guy.
Mm.
And actually, that's kind of what's interesting about it, because you're just sort of like, so I'm familiar with it, but I'm not. So I don't really have any idea what's going to happen. Unlike the other Captain America book, where you always know what's going to happen, but I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what the quote unquote rules are for this. And this issue is all about sort of the psychological and somewhat physical torture of Captain America. But I find the stuff that's really odd about it is that he's in a small Vietnamese village full of all the peasants have super soldier serum in them. And so, like, an old lady beats him up and the kids all hold him down. And I do like the contrast of those ideas. Yeah. And also, Ron Garney's absolutely killing it. He's got a night, like... The style on this is really sort of rough and sketchy, and it's been colored in such a way that sort of gives it a different quality. I am enjoying it, almost despite myself, I would say.
Well, I mean, I've always known that you've been a fan of waterboarding.
I love waterboarding.
Recreational waterboarding.
Exactly. And then finally, I believe people really want to know about what's going on in G.I. Joe Infestation number 1. I assume I'm the only person reading this.
I read it because of that it was on this list that you sent us.
Now let me ask.
I read
it. It was a pretty good issue, wasn't it?
I don't know. you know, like, if you're gonna do this sort of thing, I kind of knew what the infestation like crossover thing was. Kind of. It's not even really a crossover.
No.
You know, and I feel, if you're gonna go to all this trouble to have all this, this cross promotional, like, really go for it with like the villain. You know, like,
you're right.
Oh, it's just like a computer. You know, like artificial intelligence has taken over the computers, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know,
well, I guess what I mean was it actually came off as a really good regular G.I. Joe issue. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah,
it was part of this other thing.
Yeah, that it wasn't. It fit all the things that I imagined from G.I. Joe, including Baroness's questionable management skills. Like, you know, like teasing the guy that she's going to kill him and then just killing him anyway. You know, like that.
She's not nice.
She's not. But that does not inspire good effort.
Connor's right. This is definitely not going to lead to a crossover of all these things. But it happened. It's fine. We're going through it. I want to know how this thing ends.
We're not going to see Snake Eyes fighting Spock. We're just going to see Spock and Snake Eyes fighting a mutual foe.
I want Winston Zeddemore back to back with Optimus Prime.
You're going to see
blasting zombies.
You're going to see Snake Eyes fighting Spock, and they're struggling, and then it just becomes a hug, and then you hear sobbing, and then that's the cliffhanger. You don't know which one was crying.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just come up with that now? That's
good. Yeah, that's
it might. Away.
I know. Spoilers, everyone. That's how my fan fiction ending is going to go when I write my own infestation title. So this is in Ghostbusters too, and Transformers.
Nah. Yeah. No. The Transformers one's not so great. I can't get into it. It's robots. I kind of feel
the disguise. Same way about
G.I. Joe, to be honest.
No, that's fine. Yeah. G.I. Joe, like, if it was your thing. G.I. Joe was my thing when I was a kid. I loved it. So, I'm not that way about a lot of things, but G.I. Joe, I like
it. You might be giving Transformers short shrift.
I might be. It's just not my
thing. I think there really is more than meets the eyes to the Transformers.
Like, the part where the Cobra guy was, like, listing off the things that Psycho could do as if he was reading the back of his card.
Well, you know what? Actually, what's odd about that is that they made the point earlier that when you go into G.I. Joe, all that shit is hidden and no one's supposed to know who you are, and they got all of Psycho stuff pretty easy. We can't go into this. There was a little bit of an issue. And I was like, whoa, did you just Wikipedia him? He's a hugely famous PhD? Shit.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, where did they... Yeah, what? How did I get all this info on him?
I liked the interrogation. It was a good interrogation room scene because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know who was going to win. I didn't know who was lying.
Sure. As far as the G.I. Joe story goes, I thought it was, it fit all the things.
User reviews are next up. A couple other things we want to talk about real quick. Wally the Green Monster wrote about 5 Ronin number 1, gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And
4 out of 5.
4 to 5, that's what I meant. And I'm not sure if it was 1%. It was 1% or less of the community's pick of the week. He said, I love samurais. So the idea of taking... there's a mispaced apostrophe there. So the idea of taking some of Marvel's toughest characters and throwing them into an Elseworlds-type weekly miniseries was an easy sell for me. We are brought into the world where the masterless samurai, or Ronin, are out for vengeance for their slain master. This issue focused on Wolverine, shocking, and an infamous Ronin who can't be killed, and we have a pretty fun samurai story. This isn't a superhero book. They really just took the essence of Wolverine and boiled him down, made him more human. So we really didn't see the Wolverine we know from the X-Men universe, and I thought it was a pretty good thing.
I read this.
Really?
It was art. Yeah, the art is really nice. I like the concept with it. It's not going to be Wolverine it's a different character each issue.
I assume there's 5 characters.
Yeah, I'm excited for there's
5 gonna be different Wolverines.
Well, actually, there are multiple Wolverines in this issue.
Really?
They're apparently all the Ronin are look like Wolverine, which is very confusing because it's sort of a photoreal style. It's sort of like a cross between Maleev and Lark. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And it's a lot of narration, and it's like circular narration, and it's kind of like plotting and stuff. But I'm excited. There's an issue down the line somewhere in this series with Hulk as like a Buddhist monk.
Huh.
So I'm kind of interested in where they're going to go with that. So it's beautiful to look at. I don't think it's as photoreal as, say, like Maleev's doing on Scarlet, but it's, somewhere in the happy medium of photoreal and photo reference. So it's really, really pretty to look at, and it's got your Bushido action. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Paul, do you want to tell us about Darth Duck?
Let's talk about Darth Duck, the Darkwing Duck Annual, number 1. Story, 5 out of 5. Art, 5 out of 5. Oh, Darth Duck was the one who reviewed it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I already think he's biased.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, suspicious.
As of the time of this this recording, the POW percentage is 11.1%.
Also suspicious.
Darkwing Duck's first annual. Let me read, Jesus. So Darkwing Duck's first annual gets everything right. Two exciting stories featuring Darkwing that are both entertaining and enjoyable for new and old readers alike, while taking full advantage of the return of creator Tad Stones with an original comic story, all new villain, and a fantastic story of the creation and development of the character of Darkwing Duck. There's a little back matter in there, the little story. Darkwing Duck is the terror that flaps in the night, and Darkwing Duck Annual Number 1 is the comic that needs to be in your collection.
You see what he did there? A little,
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
what's, there's a word for that when you do that.
Pull quote? Is that?
Well, no, he had the both sides of that sentence balanced. The terror that flaps in the night, the comic.
We need Toby Ziegler.
There's a, no, there's totally a word for that.
It's going on the trade.
Yeah, should right? be. It's going to be like from ifanboy.com. We'll be like, yeah, we didn't actually write that. It's a user. Anyway.
But we like the Darkwing Duck comics anyway, so.
They're sort of better than they have any need to be, which is always a good thing. Hey, so iFanboy, you may know, is part of. Oh, by the way. See, I'm not good at these things. This is where the other guys sort of totally run the ship, and I'm not good at that part. I quip. That's what I do. And then Tom's here quipping, so I can't.
No, I don't. Yeah.
He doesn't even know
what we're all
do.
Thrown off. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Do you want me to read it? Jesus.
No, that's fine. but I wanted to say, if you want to leave reviews of your own comics, go to ifanboy.com/comics. You make your pull list. You can rate the books you read. And that'll create a big average for the whole site, which are actually pretty damn prescient. And you can write reviews of your own books. And if you're lucky, if you're one of the few chosen ones, you can get those reviews read here on the show. And we are part of Graphically, iFanboy, the digital comics company Graphically. But did you know that Graphically has over 2,000 comics for you to download and read, with publishers like Marvel, Archaea, Boom, Top Cow, and Archie being added every single day, and like a whole bunch of other publishers. It's almost at the point where if you want to name sort of almost any publisher, we've got stuff on there. If you have an iPad, an iPhone, we have an Android app now. You can read it on your desktop. You can read it through the Chrome store. On the web, there's all sorts of ways to enjoy it. And some of the stuff, there's commenting on a lot of things. There's social features. A little different for each one, but they're just opening up some new ones and ways to interact with Facebook and all sorts of stuff that's coming. There's developments happening fast and furious. It's been like 3 or 4 updates to the Android app already in a very short amount of time. So we're definitely committed to making sure that it's a really good experience for people. And it's a lot of cool stuff coming up this year. So go over, check it out. Even if you don't spend anything, there's a ton of free books to read. And then if you do want to spend some money on books, then it's a good deal. It's going to cost you half what it does in the store anyway. So go to graphically.com. You can see all the links and info to all the different apps. And check it out, because
I'm reading some early POWers on there right now. So
there you go. And then I think that's on there. It's a good way to check that stuff out. Let's quickly go to the emails while we still have time. All right. Arif from Malaysia says, I'm going through a rough patch in my life. Where a member of my immediate family has fallen very ill, and at roughly the same time, I'm unfortunately in the middle of a very messy breakup with my girlfriend fiance of the past 4 years.
Jesus.
You should send this to Dr. Doom.
Wait, is that his girlfriend and his fiance, or?
Well, if that's
it's
the case,
both their girlfriend.
Then it's his own fault. Still. In addition to my work and sports, I have been turning more and more to books and comics to boost my spirits. My question is, do you guys have any recommendations for uplifting or hopeful comics or runs of comics that might help reinstill my faith in relationships and for less troubled times ahead? As a guide, I tend to read mostly DC and Vertigo books, plus a smattering of Image and indie stuff. I am a big Superman fan. Except the JMS run. You didn't need to add that. And I think the current Giffen and DeMatteis run on Booster Gold is one of the most underappreciated comics being published. Day Tripper by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Bá is also very, very good. Thanks, guys.
Okay, put down the Vertigo books for a bit.
Yeah, a lot of indie comics, you're in trouble too.
Yeah, just put those down, walk away. This might seem strange. I'd say Starman.
Yeah. It's about a dude getting his shit together and finding the joy and love in his life.
Yeah, there's some low points, but it ends on a high point.
That's a really good one. He mentioned Day Tripper, which I think is a really good one. Sort of makes you appreciate the things that are worth appreciating in life. If you want to go completely the opposite way around, I think that sometimes if you look at even a book like Axe Cop, it's just so much pure fun
Yeah.
And it's out there, like, it's hard to feel bad about it. It's just this, like, it's the pure indomitable imagination and spirit of a kid, and that makes you feel really good. In that same way, there's other books like that that are sort of all out nutsoid stuff, and I think if you look at last year, you look at Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark, just something crazy.
Yeah.
Something that's, I don't know if it instills your love in humanity, but it just makes you feel good to read it. You're like, that's ridiculous. What am I worried about? There's a shark swimming through trees.
True story, swear to God, would also be a good one.
That's definitely true. Yeah. There's a few. I'm trying to think of any more, but that'll give you something to go with. I know you can get Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark for $2. You can go download the PDF directly. Or it's, again, in that same sort of way, like, the comics that make me feel good that Thor the Mighty Avenger.
Yeah,
of course, yeah.
Just sort of nice. It's just nice. And there's love.
It's nice.
Fine. Listen to
Batlash.
It's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Batlash is fun.
Don't read Jonah Hex.
No.
Stay away from that. Stay away from Vertigo almost in general, completely.
It's just nothing good. Humanity is not good over there.
Don't read Scalped.
Don't read Scalped.
Read Scalped. I think we have time for another one. Paul, you want to read?
Sure. Let's see. Darren says, I'm fascinated by John Byrne. I'm almost 40, and I've been reading comics since the mid-70s. And as you well know, for a good while, John Byrne was at the very top of the industry. While other creators from his era, Mignola, Perez, Miller, etc., have gone on to become legends, Byrne seems to have suffered an epic fall from grace. Byrne's style hasn't changed that much over the years, but neither has Alan Davis's, and he's an icon these days. Is he that hard to work with? Has he burned all his bridges? Is it an anti-Canadian thing? Maybe he really likes working on Star Trek. I guess my question is, what the hell happened to the great John Byrne, and is there anyone else you can think of who was at the forefront of the industry back in the day who's just become kind of irrelevant now?
I have to say, I think there's a couple statements in here that I think are a little off. Mm-hmm. John Byrne is an icon, right?
Yes, yeah. And nothing's going to change that.
Yeah.
However,
no matter what he does.
There is something to be said about the fact that he, you know, he was at one time the John Cassaday or the, I'm trying to think of another artist who's, I mean, he was Jim Lee is who he was.
But know. Someday John Cassaday won't be John Cassaday.
Yeah, I think we're there. And
you know, that's how it works
It is. I mean, John Byrne's a slightly different, like, you never ever be able to take away what the man did, and he's still got all those skills, but you know, if he puts a book out now, people don't seem to care as much. Now that's, you know, shifting time, changing tastes, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's made a reputation for himself, which is not entirely unfounded.
No. To get back to the work thing, mm-hmm. he still puts out a significant amount of work, which I think if you're comparing it to someone like Alan Davis, who when Alan Davis, you know, gets out his one book, you know, it's one or two books a year. I mean, there is a difference in that Byrne is still kind of a working artist, you know, like unlike some of these other guys. Now, whether that's by choice, I think it's by choice, probably. I mean,
he seems to be doing things that he wants to be, that he's interested in.
Sort of. And one of the other things that happened with Byrne is that, you know, and I've talked about artists with this. If you look back at stuff that he was doing in the 80s and 90s, it looked different. And he works in a style now where I think a lot of times either he inks himself or whoever he's got working is, like, they're just not as good as the people who he used to have inking him. I don't know if that's because his style got looser, but there's definitely something going on there. I remember a definite sea change with Byrne around the time that I started reading comics again and Spider-Man Chapter 1 came out. And this was a big deal because he was going to retell the origin of Spider-Man in much the way that Ultimate Spider-Man did, but it was in canon or whatever, and it just wasn't very good. It was out of it was set in the wrong time. It was full of weird anachronisms, and it tried to be too much like the thing that we already had.
Yeah.
And then after that, Ultimate Spider-Man came out and was a big hit, and he kind of made a stink about it.
Mm-hmm.
About it, you know, he's like, "Well, I already did this," and you know what he did wasn't very good. Where you know, and he couldn't see the difference between it. And I feel like a lot of bridges got burned there, maybe not just in the industry, but also with some fans.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that people were like, okay, you're out of touch with this. But that doesn't... God, when I remember when I first started reading comics when I was 12, 13 years old, that guy, anything he did, I'd buy.
Yeah.
And it still holds up. It's still beautiful, beautiful work. He's totally a master.
I think we get his sort of personality, mm-hmm. the personality aspect, mm-hmm. mixed up with the work aspect a lot. In his case, especially, I think way more than anybody else. And I think it kind of clouds how people feel about it. I think people feel like he's undeserved. They either feel that he is put down upon, which I don't think he. I think he brings that on himself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he still does get a lot of work. And as far as the market goes, I mean, no one sells what they used to.
No.
I mean, that's...
No one sells what the worst selling books.
Alan Davis doesn't.
No.
You know, like, that's everyone. That is not just John Byrne. I mean, that is everyone.
And Mignola never did.
Yeah, you know, so I think we get so much... He's got such a large personality, mm-hmm. you know, like, mostly for the negative for a lot of people. And that really clouds, I think, how we sort of judge his career, because we're so in the know about that stuff now. Way more than we have been in the past.
Which was also his choice to be incredibly public
exactly.
about it and be very, we'll call it quotable.
Yes, quotable would be a good way to say it. But I think it's an interesting question, though.
It is.
You know what's fun, though? Hmm. The I got the trade of Leonard McCoy, Frontier Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Star Trek. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like total throwback comics, mm-hmm. But it's very, you know, enjoyable.
I don't know if this is right, but it feels like he doesn't want to be scripted by him. He wants to write it. And if he were to draw other people's scripts right now, I think he'd still be one of the best guys working.
Mm.
But he has sort of a retro style that is not in vogue right now, with his writing. So when he's writing and drawing stuff, it's a little...
Where it totally works for like original series Trek stuff and Leonard McCoy and like an ascot, his crazy beard. It's a lot of fun that way, and kooky aliens. But so
still, you know, great artist, legend. I mean, like easily. I'd say one of the top 10 artists of sort of the modern era, easily.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read enough of his stuff, but also, I mean, his Fantastic Four runs are kind of legendary, too. And that is all the emails we have. You can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com with any of your questions. We're not going to do any voicemail this week. We're running out of time. But if you want to call in, you can go to, you can dial 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Leave us a voicemail. Get to the point. Make it short. Tell us who you are. In there somewhere and have fun with it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Have
just
fun.
Just relax, man.
Give us a call.
Just relax.
see what we're suggesting. This is not the only podcast that we do. We also have the Don't Miss podcast, and that comes out on Mondays. This week, Chris Niesman is going to be talking to Will Pfeiffer or Pfeiffer. I don't know. You tell me. About Vertigo Resurrected Finals. The Vertigo Resurrected stuff that's coming up. So look for that on Monday to come out. This past week, I released a podcast interview with somebody Tom knows quite well, Scotty Young. I had him on the show for the first time. I realized that, the very first time I met him was at the Around Comics where I met you.
Oh, well, special.
And then he was there.
And then we all went out and got tattoos.
I think Mike Norton drove us to your house, and then you took me to my hotel.
That's true.
And on that car ride, I said, I don't think Coldplay's that bad. And I regret that to this day.
I've been saving that for a day when I could publicly embarrass you in it. But now you've gone ahead and you've stolen my trump card.
Boy,
touche, Flanagan.
Then after that, they got real bad. So, it's fine. Also, we don't. There'll be another Talksplode next week too. Another a big one, a really good one, with somebody who's been on the show a bunch of times. Where we really get into
who is it?
I'm not saying. It's on purpose that I'm not doing that. You see.
Okay.
But when it gets, you never know. I'm going to lose the file, whatever. that'll be out next week. So look for that on Thursday. And also, we want to send. We don't do this very often. Want to spend a happy 48th birthday to Chris Volk, a listener out there who we're told would be very happy to hear.
Happy birthday.
There you go. And so and you get the substitutes. Sorry, Chris.
Oh.
And
me too.
House arrest 3, man.
All right, so you can check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book discussion and all the important news and discussion topics that we decide to throw up on the website. Lots of casting news, cougar news, all of our new writers.
The hottest comic book cougar news.
Yeah, and some of them went extinct, but it's okay. All of our new writers, plus Word Balloon, look at ifanboy.com about to see the social network links and stalk everybody.
Stalk us all. We also have the video show. You can find that on the website. Last week, we talked about comic book events. Fun little discussion show. And next week, Starman. It's all out on hardcover. It's all been read, and so we're going to talk about it. The show
is about Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, we're going to totally get into that. And Robert Hayes. The show. That's what the second half is about. It's mostly about the TV show. We got deep into that.
Like 8 episodes of that?
I don't even know. I'm surprised that I was able to bring up Robert Hayes.
This would be a great crossover with Manimal.
Yeah, I was like Ted Stryker, Ted Drinking Problem.
Robert How does IDW not have the Manimal franchise going? That would be... It should be part of Infestation.
I literally don't know what you're talking about.
It's a guy who can turn into an animal, but he can turn into every animal, mm-hmm. but he only ever turned into three different animals, like an eagle and a panther and something else.
FX budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
The budget-friendly Manimal.
So that's Starman. Look for that on Wednesday when we always have new video shows. You can email us at contact@fanboy.com or you can send us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 3262697. I just explained that a minute ago. You got it.
Yep.
You got it. Take us out, phone.
If only John Byrne would do interviews.
He won't.
We'd be able to solve. I interviewed him once.
You did, and it's legendary. Yeah. I don't think I would have the stones to do it. I'll be completely honest. But recently he said, I'm not doing interviews anymore. If you want me, just come to my website and ask me, because there's no point in filtering it through somebody else. And I thought, well, that just discounted all of journalism.
I know you're just going to edit everything I say, Josh, in this podcast. You're going to make it that I'm the one that said Coldplay wasn't all that bad.
The second album is pretty good.
Hey, listen. You know, people like what they like.
Oh. But since then I've really okay, that's awful. Anyway,
you bought high and sold low, Josh.
I know. If you like the show and you want to help out, you can leave us a review on iTunes. I look, there are a lot. We really totally have a lot. But now I'm at the point where I'm like, I want a lot more because we may as well just make it ridiculous. And that's the way that people find the show. Same goes with the podcast of my two podcasting compatriots here, Tom versus Aquaman and the Fuzzy Typewriter Show. Paul, you're on like 16 different podcasts now.
Yeah, I do a lot of guesting. It's just that fills the lonely nights.
I gotcha.
The Bruce Valanche.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And there's The Deceptionist as well as a new one. We're talking about, you know, creative writing on that one. So there you go.
Yeah. So you can go and check those out. But if you like those shows, it's important to leave reviews or tell people about it. Link them on Twitter, on Facebook. Tell people about it. To go to the shop. Tell people about iFanboy who you think don't know about it or might enjoy it. There's so many ways that you can watch the video show or listen to the audio show and all the sort of different devices and stuff. So, you know, more people is better for everybody. And thank you. Thank you all. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
That flew by.
I thought we really had a good talk. I feel better.
Yeah.
Feel lighter.
I just feel lighter. Yeah, I got a lot off my chest.
That's good. Yeah. I felt like people didn't know enough about what I thought about the Adam special. But now I'm unburdened.
I feel like my diaphragm is working better. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I've done this whole thing upside down in a harness.
Tom, would you be okay if I started Tom versus Murder, She Wrote? I've really been wanting to do that.
Yeah, listen.
Should I call it Paul versus or?
No, you should call it Tom Caters Presents Paul versus Murder, She Wrote.
Okay.
I like that.
I'm also thinking of reading Moby Dick for a podcast. Several people have tried it, but they never finish. They never get past like chapter 7.
Will you read it to the beat and melody of the Mariner's Revenge song?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
I feel like if you're going to start that, you got to finish it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a week to get 7 chapters in.
Mm-hmm.
How many days does that actually take physically?
How many to read the book?
Yeah.
It'll take me like a year.
Wow. Like, but in real time?
I'm going to go to like a Red Lobster or something and get like a private booth and sit there with my Yeti mic and read passages from Moby Dick.
I think he misunderstood the ocean theme. Shut up. There's netting everywhere. Is there netting in a Red Lobster? I feel like there should be.
There used to be. I think they've toned it down.
Okay.
Like, it's not like a seafood shanty.
Hey, there's a room. There's a room you can ask for.
The net room.
The old-fashioned room.
It's mostly just the upholstery in the booths. It's like lobster upholstery.
Plastic crabs and starfish. All right, well, that is it for this show. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. I don't even know who's going to be here next week. It's gonna be nuts. Maybe Ron and Connor will come back. Maybe not. Maybe they're touring and on heroin binges. That's what happens in Seattle. As far as
they're gonna get shanghaied. That's what's gonna happen. They're gonna be working on a merchant vessel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We got jobs at the Utilikilt store.
It's a port city. They could be in Shanghai.
They got shanghaied to Shanghai. I assume they come back. Vancouver, probably. big heroin town. So yeah. If they head up there, watch out.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm Josh.
I'm Paul.
I'm Tom.
Well, that was very professional. That's better than we've ever done. Wow. All right, thanks a lot. You're the only one.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.